What's cracking? Hour number two is wide open. I am in Southern California. I am pumped. I'm Jim Rome. The show is brought to you by Rockin' Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rockin' Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience because it's Friday. No, it's not, Rome. It's Thursday. Why do you keep saying that? Because it's my Friday. I'm on a plane after the program to Wisconsin, and I know it's Friday because James Kelly is here. James Kelly only comes on Friday. So now Kelly and I spent the entire segment, the top of the hour break, talking about Kansas City and Denver. Who you got? Are you going to play that game tonight? Are you going to lay the points? Do you like Denver at home? Suddenly they're playing much better. Can you really see Kansas City losing three in a row? Let's say not, but they're having a lot of trouble stopping the run, aren't they? And Denver can run the football. So if you want to break that one down, Thursday night, good matchup. AFC West, who do you have and why? Hit me up. 1-800-636-8686. Go to the phones in a minute, but I want to get into Game 4 of the ALCS. It was postponed from last night. They'll play it tonight. And that does not mean, even without the game, it does not mean that there wasn't news, because there was. There was news, and frankly, it was pretty stupid. Like, if it was baseball and something dumb happened, then it somehow must involve the code. And it does. Fresh off the suggestion from Alex Rodriguez that the Astros had discovered something in Luis Severino early in Game 3, that he was tipping pitches, now there's more intrigue and more allegations of espionage. Let me stop right there. I love that Alex Rodriguez is somehow involved with the code and somebody violating the code. You know, the guy who screamed on a pop-up, "Hey!" How many different versions of the unwritten code did A-Rod violate or obliterate? Anyway, back to this one. According to SNY, the Yankees believe that the Astros were stealing signs earlier in the series. Here's a part of that report. Quote, according to three sources, a Yankees coach noticed a whistling sound in the opposing dugout on certain pitches Saturday night in Houston. The Yankees started yelling across the field, and people in the dugouts argued back and forth. The whole dugout was pissed, said one source. Everyone was chirping. End of quote. All right, so there are a few sounds that are more annoying than somebody whistling, right? The only person who enjoys whistling is the dope that's doing the whistling. Whistlers are like mimes. Everybody hates their guts. They're the most annoying people in the world. Have you ever heard a whistler and thought, man, that dude's cool? I want to roll with that guy. I want to hang out with that guy. I want that whistler to be my wingman. Or dude, that is a badass tune. What else you got? Do you take requests? No, nobody's ever thought that. You hate the guy whistling. In fact, add that to our list of reasons to go. Somebody insults your race, or your religion, or spits in your face, or threatens you, or somebody close to you. All universally accepted reasons to go. You can let the hands go for any of those things. Add whistling to that list. Anyone who hears whistling is going to be pissed. Anything that hears whistling is going to be pissed. It even transcends the animal kingdom. Look, I'm not afraid to say this. I'm just going to put it out there. We have a couple of cats at home, Cody and Sapphire. I want to name these cats Bombay and Sapphire. Get it? Bombay Sapphire?
Bombay Sapphire.
Janet killed that. She wouldn't allow it. Anyway, these dudes are cool. I'm not afraid to admit it. Like, I wouldn't do anything as stupid as getting a cat tattoo on my arm. No names mentioned, Hawk. But they're cool dudes. I like hanging out with them. So when I met Janet, she had another cat. It's kind of like it became like a step cat to me. I inherited the cat. Love the cat. She has a little Persian, a chunky little Persian named Allie. Allie cat. Man, I love that cat. Who am I kidding? That cat was like my best friend. I mean, there wasn't a human being that I liked better than that cat. Just saying. So this cat was so cool. This cat was chill. This cat was sweet. I loved her. One day I'm kicking it on the couch, watching a game, and I have no idea why, but I started to whistle. I'm not a whistler. I hate whistlers. I started doing it. This cat looks straight up at me. Again, super chill, super laid back cat. Female cat. She's looking up at me as I'm whistling. And I give her that old Kirk Cousins, "You like that?
You like that?
You like that cat? You like that?
You like that?"
So I whistle a few more bars. this old gal jumps up on the couch, runs up on me, and literally bites me in the face. Bit me in the cheek. Like the damnest thing ever. Never scratched anybody in 20 years. Never bit anybody until I started whistling. Ran up on me, bit me in the face. I see you working, Alley Cat. R.I.P. Everybody hates whistlers. So I can see where the Yankees were pissed. But the Yankees' beef with the whistling isn't that somebody in the Astros dugout was busting out a whistled version of Careless Whisper. It's that it was being done to alert Astro batters about specific pitches. You see, they weren't pissed that they were whistling. They were pissed that they were whistling in the pitches. The report goes on to state, quote, according to sources, the Yankees' loud objections on Saturday night led to the Astros cutting the whistling act in Game 2. All right, so quickly, a couple of things to pull from this. The argument that the Yankee side of things is that the whistling sound would be seen as a violation of the unwritten code on sign stealing. Like, according to the code experts, finding out that a guy is tipping pitches is fine. Stealing signs might even be fine, but it's how you share the intel once you get it that matters. For instance, one unnamed Major League executive told SNY, quote, I would consider whistling a tired act that goes beyond what is acceptable. If the Astros or anyone else were doing it, it would be considered a break in the unwritten rules. I have not been a part of any team that used a whistle from the dugout for pitch type or location. End quote. Right? So you can pick signs or even the pitches, but you can't whistle them in. Another coach told SNY, quote, baseball traditionally doesn't like audio signs. For some reason, we are more comfortable with the opposite. So, did the Astros go over the line? Probably. But honestly, I don't know where to draw the line anymore. End quote. So, there's the argument about what is and what's not okay, and what's over the line and what's not over the line. But now, even the guys in the game don't know where the line is. So, it's okay to pick signs. It's okay to pick signs and tell your teammates what they are. Just don't whistle whatever intel that you've picked up. Oh, all right. One more point. And I'm reading from the report. According to three sources, a Yankees coach noticed a whistling sound in the opposing dugout on certain pitches on Saturday night in Houston. And then let me remind you, there was no whistling in Game 2. So for the record, the Astros, who were doing the whistling that pissed off the Yankees in Game 1, were shut out 7-0 in Game 1. And then when they stopped whistling, they won Games 2 and 3. So help me out with this. Exactly what are the Yankees complaining about? Something that the Astros did that got them hammered in Game 1. So it's not just a matter of the Yankees being bitter that they're down 2-1 and looking for excuses. The excuse comes from a game that they dominated. Houston had 3 hits in Game 1 and 0 runs. So the Yankees are allegedly complaining about a team, allegedly stealing signs in a game where the opposition had 3 hits and no runs. And then they stopped doing it in the next 2 games and they won them. What the hell are we talking about here? The allegation that the Astros cheated in the game where they got smoked. That's what you're complaining about. And then they didn't cheat in the 2 games that they won. I mean, that's a really weird allegation. I mean, to read that report, you'd think the Astros were the new New England Patriots when it came to espionage. You know, cheaters. Until they realized that they did it in a game where they got shut down. I don't know. Based on that, if I'm Aaron Boone and I'm the Yankees, instead of crying about the Astros whistling, I'd complain that they stopped. I don't want the Astros dugout to whistle in every single game. What did it get them? It got them shut out. So you tell me, are the Yankees right or are they paranoid? Or are they right to be paranoid? And once again, figuring out that somebody is tipping is fine. That's on the pitcher and the catcher to self-scout and stop tipping. Because if you tip, the Astros are going to find you out. They figured out Yu Darvish in the World Series. They figured out Tyler Glasnow in the NLDS. They may have figured out Luis Severino in Game 3. A.J. Hinch said it best. If they don't want to tip their pitches, then they should take consideration into doing the same thing over and over again. End of quote. So, do the Astros notice things? It sure seems like they do. Do they steal signs and then whistle about it? I really don't know. But it seems pretty clear they're in the Yankees' heads. They are so far inside there. The Astros are complaining about things that may have helped the Yankees. Either way, you've got Tanaka and Greinke tonight. Rematch of Game 1. This whole thing is about Game 1 and whistling. Bring it on in Game 4. Let's get it, man. Bring the tension. Bring the paranoia. Bring the whistling. Bring the allegations. All right, so really quickly, and sorry it took so long to lay that out, but I want to make sure I got that out there. They're crying about whistling in a game they won 7-0. All right, so yesterday, Rick from Buffalo called, and I'm not sure I've ever heard that guy that loud, that violent, and that pissed. One of the topics of his call was Caleb in Green Bay.
How about this for an idea, fat boy? Because we all know you're not losing weight by diet and exercise. When you finally admit defeat, I'm going to start a GoFundMe page with all proceeds to be used towards your Al Roker fat man surgery. Because if we're being real here, Lev, that's the only chance you got. I'll even kick in the first 500. What can I say? I'm a charitable guy.
He's a pissed off guy is what he is. Rick in Buffalo coming for the Leb. The Leb was a third place finisher in the 2019 Smack Off. He's calling now from Green Bay to respond to what Rick said yesterday. Caleb, what's going on?
Oh, sorry, Jim. You went to me? Oh, I apologize.
Well done.
I was on hold. I heard Rick in Buffalo's call yesterday, which is funny because I wasn't listening to the show, but he's so loud, it doesn't matter. And I'll bet you $10 that joke has been used before, but I don't care. Still makes me laugh. Over the years, people have said the old school clone Rick emulates is Jeff from Richmond, but I have to disagree with them. The old school clone Rick looks up to is Joe in the OC. And, I mean, he literally looks up to Joe in the OC. Has anybody seen a full-length photo of this guy? Rick is shorter than Bob Dosmati's jungle career. He's shorter than the life expectancy of a bag of Werther's Originals at Grandpa Rick's house. Rick, you said yesterday you wanted to start a charity drive to get my stomach stapled, but at least I can do something about my physical deformity. I was going to start a GoFundMe to fix yours, but I don't know how much stilts go for these days. I mean, when you were in HB this August, did you actively search for potholes to stand in when you got your picture taken? Dude, mix in some tippy toes. Jim, this guy is so tiny, bald, and bronze, it's down to Tarantino and Scorsese for who gets to take him home next February. But I guess at least we know why his voice is so chalky. It's because he eats handfuls of Flintstones vitamins to try to catch up to his students. And this is all irrespective of his garbage phone calls. Rome, think of it this way. Of all the brilliant callers you've had in the past, Ia Frady, Doc Mike, Sean, Brad, Josh in Detroit. I mean, not only the greats, but the ones the greats aspire to be. Some of the best lines in comedic history have been uttered on this show. Vic and NoCal panicking like Marv Albert when he forgets the safe word. Mike and Indy, toes in different area codes. Literally everything that came out of the mouth of Jim and Fall River's donkey. Gold in abundance. But the guy who currently sits atop the jungle power rankings with his little baby legs dangling over the edge, has never uttered a more clever phrase than, Caleb is fat, you friggin' moron! I can't comprehend how this guy is so popular, Jim. I will never understand it. I guess I'll just have to punt on this one. Clones, we are in the final stretch of the weight loss challenge. Official weigh-in is November 1st. I've lost 40 pounds. Beeks hasn't eaten a salad since the Reagan administration. Go to GoFundMe.com/BeeksVFCaleb to help us out. Every penny we raise goes to charity. Jim, I got to bounce on platform shoes, on step stools, on booster seats, on baby wells in the 360, on Wisconsin.
Get it, fat kid! Caleb in Green Bay. My man just gets better and better and better. Nice job, Leb. Now you see how he finished in third in the 2019 Smack Off. He's got the kind of game to win that thing. Of course, it's always going to be the BIC versus the field. Who you got, Brad or the field? As long as Caleb is in the field is a solid bet. I mean, who else comes back from that verbal beatdown that Rick laid on him yesterday? But Caleb, handling his business. Nice job, Leb. 1-800-636-8686. Who else? Rick in Buffalo yesterday, Caleb today. Anybody else want in? You know where to find me. Next hour, I've got Scott Satterfield and Cliff Floyd. I've got Alvin's 4 Days That Were. I want to talk about Brooks Koepka dropping some straight fire on Rory McIlroy. I want to reset David Goggins and more. All that's coming up. You ever get in your car and your car won't start? Been there. It's the worst. Dead battery. The last thing you want during the cold months is a dead battery. But it's going to happen. It's going to happen to one out of four of you this winter. Is it going to be you? Make sure it's not. Get yours tested for free during Superstar Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it does need to be replaced, O'Reilly has the Superstar Battery just for your car, your truck, or your SUV. And you know you can trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their pros know what it takes to get the job done right. They'll check your battery for free. They'll also check your alternator and your starter for free. And your wiper blades, bulbs, and engine lights as well. O'Reilly can resurface your drums and rotors. They can loan you tools. They can build you a custom hydraulic hose. And did I even mention, they can mix paint. Pretty cool, right? Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years, and you can too. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
All right, welcome back. So episode 100 of the Jim Rome podcast officially dropped yesterday. And if you've been waiting on the milestone century mark edition of the original Side Hustle, the wait is now over. It's out right now. I would highly encourage you, I would urge you to drop a needle on that after the show or over the weekend or during your commute or while you're at the gym, whenever you have that time, anytime outside this window. Because my guest for the triple digit episode is the incomparable David Goggins. Maybe you know that name, maybe you don't. Now, when I say there is nobody like this guy, literally, there is nobody like this guy. Literally. If you know Goggins, you know that no introduction or Cliff Notes version of that wiki page is going to do this man justice. He's as close to superhuman as anybody I've ever spoken to. And it's impossible for me in a short take like this to really quantify or characterize the kind of life that he led, has lived already. But we're talking about somebody who had a brutal childhood, who had a father who routinely beat his mother and Goggins and his brother, somebody who encountered rampant racism growing up, somebody who struggled with multiple learning disabilities, somebody who bounced from the military and then took a job as an overnight exterminator. Somebody who went from 175 pounds to nearly 300 pounds with no purpose, no direction, seemingly no chance whatsoever. Until one day. One day, as he tells it, he took a long, hard look into what he calls the accountability mirror, and then everything started to change.
I used to lie my ass off. Why? Because I had no one in my mind that liked me. I was an insecure kid, could barely read, could barely write. So I made up a lot of shit. I was a kid that, because I got caught so much and I felt so different in that damn school of mine, I became a character. I became a clown. I thought maybe if I look different, how I dressed and how I act, I can kind of fit in better by being a clown. I was lazy. I didn't want to go to school for several reasons, but no one knew that about me. So I had to go to myself, and even though a lot of people me up, my parents, life, whatever it may be, what I had to do in that accountability mirror was I had to own the fact that no one's coming back to help me out, and I also had to own the fact that I helped cause a lot of this myself. So what I did was I put these sticky notes all over this mirror about things I need to change, and the accountability mirror became a very raw, real conversation with myself that was just, I had to change, and no one's coming back to save me.
David Goggins, as I mentioned about that podcast, that episode, there is a lot of profanity. And again, it's not gratuitous. That's the way he expresses himself. And, you know, you might take exception to this, but there are times when there really is no better word to use to make the point or to emphasize the point than the word that he used there. You might disagree. But again, he's not doing it gratuitously. This guy's just all passion and grit and heart. So he took a literal look in the mirror and did not like what he saw and owned it. And that was the first step. The second step was going to war with himself to forge an entirely new identity.
David Goggins is the kid that was abused, that was beat, that had to overcome learning disabilities, stuttering, his mom not being around, and even talked about not being loved. In my family, we didn't show that kind of affection. We still don't. So all these things formed a very insecure, judgmental, what was me type of kid. And that kid was very soft. So going through my life, I realized, man, David Goggins is kind of a punk. And that was a reality that I didn't want to come to terms with. And it bothered me, especially being a man. You know, you always want to be a tough guy. So I came to grips with that, and I realized I had to start to formulate another human being. I started to invent Goggins. Kind of like inventing Frankenstein or whoever the f*** that thing was. And I went to the lab, and the lab was basically everything in my life that I was afraid of, that I hid from. I started to just straight up attack it with an aggressive mindset. And through that, I started forming this new man, which was Goggins.
This is why I do this podcast, for conversations like that. This is why I've been saying what I've been saying about David Goggins, one of the most compelling people I've ever spoken to. So Goggins had to create a new identity, had to forge an entirely new identity. He had David Goggins, the kid who he said was insecure, not honest, and was a punk. And then he created Goggins. Goggins would go on to drop nearly 125 pounds and grind through three different hell weeks in a year to become a Navy SEAL. And then after a brilliant and unparalleled military career, he goes on to become an ultra marathoner, a world record holder, a best-selling author, and a motivational speaker. The question is, how in the world did that guy get there, given where he started? How did that guy go on to become that guy, arguably the baddest guy on the planet? Pound for pound, the toughest guy I think I've ever seen. When pound for pound, he used to tip the scales at 300 and was an overnight exterminator, killing roaches. How did he get there? By suffering, by callousing the mind, by being accountable and brutally honest with himself. And part of being brutally honest is admitting that he really doesn't give a damn what you or I think about any of this. He's not doing this to build a brand. He's not doing this to sell books. If he were, he'd be hammering social media with the message, like a lot of people in his position try to do. Not Goggins. In fact, despite having an enormous social media following and presence, he actually thinks that social media is the devil.
Social media is the devil to me. It can really get your mind thinking about, I'm not where I want to be. I'm not good enough. I'm not this enough. I'm not that enough. I don't have enough. Most people are painting a picture of their great life at these certain times. It's not their life. So we see the best side of them. And I don't like to paint that side of me. I don't want you motherfuckers seeing the best side of me. I cuss a lot. Get over it, people. Yeah, you all know who David Goggins is now. I'm going to paint this nasty, ugly picture of who I am and the problems I still go through and the problems we all go through. And social media does not do that very well. Social media says, look at me. Look at my new car. Look at my new hair. Look at my new this. Look at my new that. And it makes people feel like shit. I'm not about that stuff, man. I'm about empowering people. I'm about go to war with yourself.
I'm about empowering people. I'm about go to war with yourself. I'm about that podcast. So if you're wondering why I'm resetting that here, I want to make damn sure that you find your way over to that. Because I can't have that conversation with that guy here. That's why the podcast exists. I mean, I so badly want to blow out an entire hour of this show just to run the entire Goggins episode here. Because even just playing select clips like that does not do it justice. You need to hear the whole thing. But since I can't do that, and I know some of you won't make it to the pod, I definitely want you to hear the clip of him talking about his final meeting with his father. Now remember, his father routinely beat his mother, as well as Goggins and his brother. Goggins and his mother ultimately were able to flee his father, but the physical and emotional scars remain to this day from the constant abuse. And Goggins knew there was no way he could reinvent himself and his life without first settling up with his father.
I went back to my father. I had to face him. We never apologized to one another, but what happened was I was able to put a title on my father. And what that title was for him to f*** me up, my mom up, my brother up the way he did. There had to be something wrong with him, man, because we were good people. And my mom is damaged from it. My brother's damaged from it. I'm damaged from it. Why? Why did you beat us for no reason? So I was asking myself these questions why I was with this man. I didn't ask him because he went off. He was drunk. He went off on some stupor to talking shit like he always does. And I just sat there and realized, okay, I got my answers. Something had to f*** this man up real bad to make him the way he is. And his insecurities and everything else that's wrong with him, He never faced him like I have to right now. I have to end this. And I did. So I forgave him. I never saw him again. He died about 4, 5, 6 years ago. I remember I didn't go to the funeral. Not because I hate the man. I don't hate him. I just had to get the negative energy out of my life and move forward. And that's what I did.
David Goggins, I'll say it again. I've never encountered anybody like this guy in or out of sports. Nobody quite like Goggins. And that podcast is like 45 minutes of that intensity. He'll tell you there's nothing really significant about him, that it's just his way. That's just what he knows. A strategy for overcoming what he would tell you was a completely jacked up life. I mean, maybe. But certainly a choice had to be made. A decision that he was no longer going to accept who or what he was. That he wanted to do more. That he wanted to be more. Many of us want the same. Some actually do go out and execute it. But I've never seen or heard of a transformation quite like his. Again, from a horrible childhood strife with abuse, racism, learning disabilities, obesity, an overnight job killing roaches, to an unparalleled military career, world-class endurance athlete, and arguably the toughest man on the planet. And again, it's not just hyperbole. He's got the resume to back it all up. If you don't believe me, go Google David Goggins and the Moab 240. Last part of this, we didn't get a chance to talk about that because we taped the episode before the race, but Goggins just finished a 250-mile endurance run through the most rugged terrain in Utah after veering 15 miles off course. The race directors were forced to disqualify him because he needed medical attention to treat a potentially life-threatening altitude sickness. But Goggins being Goggins stuck around Utah and got well enough and then finished the race yesterday after everybody else had gone home. One of the most badass things I've ever seen. And this episode, Ep 100, is one of the most badass things you will ever listen to. Check it out after the show. iTunes, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, JimRome.com. Use the link that I've got pinned at the top of my Twitter feed. It is a fascinating listen. It's profane, though. Just know that going in. I want to be very clear about that. There's a lot of profanity in it. But David Goggins is one of my favorite guys ever. I'm awed by this guy and what he's done. And I could talk to him for hours. All right, when we come back, I will open it up to you. Brooks Koepka was on the show about a week out, and he's still doing what he does. Brooks says, rivalry. What rivalry? Rory McIlroy, the player of the year? The guy hasn't won a major since I've been out here. Got that coming up, too. Also, you see that story about that fan? Quote-unquote fan? That stopped Myles Garrett for a picture and tried to punch him in the face? Who rolls up on Myles Garrett? That's coming up too. And Scott Satterfield and
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Next time you want a protein snack, ditch the drinks and the bars and grab a bag of Old Trapper beef jerky. Tender, tasty, real beef that's going to rock your craving for a snack, and it satisfies. Ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? So normally October is the pinnacle of the dead zone in professional golf, but not this year. October may as well be the second week of April. Lonto Griffin won the H-Town, or won in H-Town, the Houston Open. And you heard him on the show earlier this week. This guy's amazing, truly special. If you heard that debut in the jungle, you know exactly what I'm talking about. October, though, became even more memorable and even more interesting yesterday with two extremely newsworthy moments, both on the men's and women's side. Let me start with the ladies first. Leanne Walker teed it up for the Senior LPGA Championship. It was her first event in quite some time. And apparently nobody told her or her caddy that the rules have changed since her last full season back in 2008. Because in the opening two rounds of that tournament, Walker's caddy stood directly behind her during most of her putts to help line them up. That's no longer allowed. Each occurrence was worth a two-shot penalty. So yesterday, when she walked off 18, a rules official was waiting for her to let her know to go ahead and add 58 penalty strokes to her score. 58. Unfortunately for Walker, she did not make the cut after tacking on 58 penalty strokes. I said 58. So pour one out for L-Dub. Just make sure you do not stand directly behind her when you do so, because apparently the LPGA waits two rounds to drop that bill off instead of telling you right away that you just opened up a running tab that you know nothing about. Lesson learned, I suppose. If the lesson is the LPGA will let you unknowingly dig your own grave and then charge you for it afterwards. Now, on the men's side, Brooks Koepka also dug a grave, but it was not for him. And it definitely was not unintentional. Right now, the world number one and four-time major champion is in South Korea defending his title at the CJ Cup. Now, if you paid attention to the tour last year, you know that there was a really natural and organic rivalry which started to take form between Brooks and Rory McIlroy. Both dudes are the same age. Both did a lot of winning. Both occupied the top two spots in the world golf rankings for most of last year and still do. But the rivalry really got its best storyline when Rory won the FedEx Cup and he cashed in a grip of recency bias to take down the Player of the Year award, an award that should have gone to Koepka, given the year he had, and especially in the majors. And if you think that Koepka is not a little bent about that, think again. He practically said as much when he appeared on this show 6 days earlier.
I was kind of shocked at it, that I didn't win Player of the Year. The trophy's named after Jack Nicklaus. I mean, obviously, majors do matter. I find that kind of ironic.
So, love this dude or hate this dude? And by the way, how could you possibly hate this dude? Either way, you can't deny that he's not real. You can't deny that he's not honest as hell. You can't deny that it's refreshing to hear a guy openly admit that he was shocked that he did not win the Player of the Year award after he very clearly was the Player of the Year. But as part of that, an all-time snub if you ask me, the fact that Rory and Brooks were paired together in the final group of two events last year, and they each took turns winning last year, has created a rivalry that the sport needs. At least we thought that it did. It turns out Brooks does not feel like there's any rivalry whatsoever. Yesterday, when asked about it, he told the AFP, quote, "I've been out here for what, 5 years? Rory hasn't won a major since I've been on the PGA Tour. So I just don't view it as a rivalry. I'm not looking at anyone behind me. I'm the number one in the world. I've got an open road in front of me, and I'm not looking in the rearview mirror, so I don't see it as a rivalry," end quote. I mean, do I even need to say it? Do I even need to say it? Straight fire. Roars, go ahead. Base jump into an ocean of aloe as soon as possible, bud. Towel off with some burn bandages and stay the hell down. Quote, "I've been out here for what, 5 years? Rory hasn't won a major since I've been on the tour, so I just don't view it as a rivalry," end quote. In other words, you take my Player of the Year award, I take your soul. What's more dismissive than saying that there is no rivalry? I don't even know this guy exists. The implication is pretty brutal, right? You can't hang with me, so why would I consider you anything at all? You're no different than everybody else out there. It's like Don Draper in the elevator telling Ginsburg he does not think about him at all.
I feel bad for you. I don't think about you at all.
So the best part of that is even though Brooks says that he does not consider Rory a rival, him just saying that just made Rory a rival. And I'm pretty sure Brooks knows that. I'm pretty sure he didn't just torch a fellow four-time major winner and the world number two without knowing exactly what he was doing. Man, I'm here for it, too. I love it. Like Tiger and Phil badly needed Koepka writing lines for them during that disgraceful pay-per-view where we were promised all this smack talk. And then all we got was Hefty huffing and puffing and sucking air into his lapel mic. Hey, no disrespect to the dudes on tour who made it a point to be best friends and to vacation together and to hang out on 18 and wait for their guys to congratulate them after wins. But this is so much better. So much better. Brooks and Rory are going to be around for a long time, and they're going to play at a high level for a long time, and they're going to get paired together, and they're going to go up against each other in the Ryder Cup, and it's going to be awesome. If Rory carries his weight, dude can't turtle in the final groups like he has been the last couple of years. And Brooks is right. Rory hasn't won a major in a half a decade. And until he does, and as long as Brooks keeps ripping them off, and he will, then Brooks is right. There is no rivalry here. So time to get to work, Roar. Every sport needs great rivalries, especially golf. This is like Michigan saying that, oh yeah, we're rivals with Ohio State. No, you're not. If you never beat the other guy, you're not a rival. Don't confuse hating the other guy with being his rival. That only happens when you beat the other guy. And right now, Brooks has got nobody to fight with. And I wish he did. Hell, he wishes he did. This could be good. This could be good. Not as good as Elk v. Monty. But then again, nothing is, right?
I kind of take credit in a certain way for getting him going on the tour, because when we both finished school, you know, he was at this little school called Houston Baptist, and I went out to Lochinvar Golf Club, all men's club in Houston, and Fat was on the range. And I said, what are you doing, Fat? He said, oh, he says, I'm thinking about going back to England and work for IMG. I said, what the f*** is IMG? He goes, oh, it's a management firm. We control all the players. And I said, well, let me tell you something, Fat. You should go over to England for sure. Maybe go through the qualifying school. And if you get your tour card, good. If you don't get your tour card, then go work for IMG. And he goes, oh, you really think I'm good enough to try the tour?
I'm the only thing better than Elk running off the stories that he does is Elk taking credit for Monty's career. Like, he talked him out of quitting golf. And he hit him with fat bleeps like five times in that answer. Think about the podcast. You can get a little bit blue and a little bit fat. So nothing will ever be like that. Brooks Koepka, I can't get enough of him either. He was on this show 6 days ago, and he says, yeah, there's no rivalry yet. Not yet. 1-800-636-8686. Let's go to, what the hell? It's Friday. Well, my Friday. Let's go to Parody Larry. Lawrence, what's going on?
Hey, just a little belated, Jim, but happy birthday to Rome. His lettuce don't need no comb. He brings us the jungle. It's the place we call home.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very
like
good
Alvin,
call.
The guy waited like, I don't want to say a whole week, because my birthday was, what, Monday? He waited almost a whole week to do that. Can you give the guy a little bit of room? Why did you run him that fast? Even I wouldn't have done that. Anyway, Lawrence, that's how that goes. Parody Larry. Alvin's not even going to say why. He just did. Why did Alvin do that? The same reason anybody does anything they can. Alvin said, dude, why are you asking me that question? It's self-explanatory. He sucks. We tried. Hey, Lawrence, I tried. Sorry about that. All right, so looking ahead to hour number three, I might be able to squeeze you in if it's a better phone call than that. We're definitely talking Louisville football at the top of the hour. Scott Satterfield's the head football coach there, and that's coming up next. After that, we talk Major League Baseball, NLCS already done, ALCS game four tonight. The Nats are laying out, waiting for the winner of the Astros and Yankees. An MLB network analyst and a 1997 World Series champ, Cliff Floyd, will be joining us next hour. Alvin's 4 days that were a staple on Fridays also will be a part of hour number three. And still ahead.
Today's Friday.
Myles Garrett. Somebody, literally a rando, rolled up on him, got him to roll down his window, asking for a pick, and punched him in the face. That's what Myles Garrett says. Romy, whistling is so obnoxious. Regards people that play their lottery tickets at the convenience store counter. Third hour is coming up, and we've got backpack interviews. Don't go anywhere. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Scott Satterfield joins me next.
You're in a 5-minute break.